This is the calm intended presentation, which I'll try and give calmly, and then we'll kick off with a summary of a presentation I gave at the university this morning, which was deliberately sort of more to actually kind of provoke and actually really stimulate thinking. I'm David Saxby from 00. Do I need the mic? How loud do I have to speak to not need the mic? Because this is really awkward. Right. We're a practice of 13 people, and as Simon was giving his presentation, they could have written it about us. We will serve as his case study if he needs one. We're multidisciplinary. We've been around for 6 years. 9 qualified architects, only 5 of them probably undertaking a role that you would recognise as architects. This, what I'm showing you, is a report we wrote for 2011. We wrote it in December, a kind of rather earnest Christmas card, no snowflakes or baubles. And you're not seeing much of it. Behind there is a map of the world. The 13 of us have covered a vast number of cities, locations globally. This is touching on Simon's points, networked. Collectively, we've received 162,000 emails. We ourselves have generated 84,000. We've had one short of 6,000 tweets. We have 4,500 followers. Our website is a blog. It's sort of constantly posted with articles. We are that highly connected practice. This isn't lined up. We've been invited to speak in lots of locations on a wide range of topics. We've taken huge risks. We ourselves calculate we've invested, and we're not wealthy people, nearly £400,000 of blood, sweat and tears into co-owning and owning ventures that we've had to step in and kicked off. We're not a commercial organisation. I say we're a unintentionally not-for-profit. We thankfully get some recognition from what we do. You can't read any of this. The next presentation will be easier. And we are human. We've cried 28 times this year. And it says there, for either happiness, sadness, or stress, it would be nice to see the breakdown. Hours worked, 33,414. And it does say they're chosen to work. Yes, we are employers, and we don't force anybody to do anything. We've published a huge amount of information, but we're not a think tank. This part of the report was just to keep our feet on the ground. Do we walk the walk? This is where we got lunch, based on our office in the centre and our most popular haunts and what we ordered there. Again, it's keeping it real. If we're going to advocate, if we're going to evangelise, actually, are we true to ourselves? This is a spread of the major projects we did. And you can see they run from what we call institutions, buildings, hardware, platforms, and policy and books. We've done a lot. We build real buildings. It's a real sort of struggle for people to get their heads around. We can be critically thinking. We can be advising governments. We can formulate policy. At the same time, we put bricks and mortar, steel, glass and render together and make real environments. Being sort of slightly flippant, it's just a bloody long way of getting around to designing a building, but you have to start by rewriting the brief, possibly re-educating the client and even rewriting government policy to do so. Here we go, a couple of examples. Startup workspace artist studios, incubator accelerator in Sheffield, £5 million, traditional contract, God forbid. Hey, a client appointed an architect, what a risk. Hub Westminster, we designed, we operate currently, and we co-own 40% equity with a local authority. Are they crazy, wasting public money on us? No. David Cameron launched his cooperatives policy there 2 weeks ago. Richard Branson launched his new book. we are doing a role that actually is being respected as hugely valuable, and I can't see anybody else across the professions who can do what architects can do. Yeah, we fit out, say, we got very heavily criticized for doing a high-end art gallery. Somehow, if you're doing something of purpose, of value to the public, you're not allowed to be designers and actually do high-quality work. Well, we do. It's a contradiction that others can reconcile. We fit out workspace. This was sacrilegious. The project you see here is, we are not the gatekeepers of architectural design. A project called Wiki House, deliberately lowering the threshold. The profession said to us, what are you doing, giving away our territory, giving away our skills? Someone who's going to build their own building from a web platform using free software that outputs CNC cutting templates, and then they self-fabricate, are never, ever going to come to an architect to give them the shed. So this is actually democratizing design rather than putting a fence around it. On the other side there, we've actually written something called PlayStation for the Asset Transfer Unit, part of the government, actually, communities department, actually about looking at public assets and making them available for community. We gave them a marketplace online to map and actually sort of share the opportunities to local communities. Say, we're architects, we're doing this. We actually have some very good friends at coding. We have some very interesting individuals in the office who have interests in it. Open source furniture. Yeah, we give away the design. A client commissioned us to design furniture. We designed it, then put it under a Creative Commons license. Anybody can go download it, cut themselves one. The license is a share-alike license, means if you use it, if you improve it, you share it as well. It's a whole ecology of sharing. It's taken from the open source software movement. Be lazy like a fox is Linus Torvalds' phrase. You borrow, you improve, you share. It's how other communities are working. We just as a profession haven't moved into that sphere. The very quick second presentation will get us to there. More challenges to the status quo, a right to build the next mass house building industry. We've seen the long tail of house building. Six providers currently provide over 70% of the housing in the UK. The rest, which is a vastly long tail of people doing very small numbers. Actually, why are we beholden to these few? Why can't we empower the many? It's a book. It was written with funding from University of Sheffield, Knowledge Transfer. It makes the argument for actually investing public money in supporting actually self-build groups, assisted self-build. I say, we've got to take the gate away and actually not defend the activities which do, which don't generate value. I think architects holding on to activities that can be outsourced because they don't have high value is a mistake. We need to let go of the things that don't generate value and focus our efforts on what do. Sorry, I'll come back to this compendium of the civic economy. Again, a fully funded piece of work through CABE and Nesta about how place is made by civic action. Just to contradict Peter, Rowan Silver, senior policy advisor to David Cameron, number 10 policy unit, tweeted, so yeah, my credible sources are that direct network that now modern technology gives us, to say at the Australian New Zealand Public Services Conference, which he was Skyping into London, he says, Rowan Silver, we want to bust open the procurement system. There is an active government policy to break down the hierarchies, Peter says, and actually encourage contracts to be let directly to small and medium-sized enterprise. Yes, there's a battle to be had with the Treasury, but it is not an inevitable future. Everybody has recognised the flaws in such a process. So, setting this up for a good panel discussion, but actually it's not quite so clear-cut. Don't sign away your future to being subordinate to contractors. We have a role to play. We need to reclaim that role in the process. Walking the walk, a little bit there. We as an office understand that actually new forms of non-hierarchical organisation are needed. We are mutually owned as an office, distributed shares, we all invest. A list of projects. And that was just a sedate start. The students who saw some of this earlier, feel free to go and get the coffee or get to the least the head of the queue. Right, this will tell us a little bit about, well, why does Eero0 think that we have to do things differently? Well, it's not our volition. We're not simply choosing to do this because it's alternative and fashionable. It's the world we see. I'm going to skip some slides because they do repeat or they're not actually pertinent to the point, but this is how we built an office, actually, through time banking, risk sharing, and aggregated growth. Actually, we brought people on, we developed co-opportunity. We are not an employer in a traditional sense. A mantra for us, we should be less interested in the world of design and more interested in the design of the world. Our skills as designers... I can't be without my phone for long. There's people wanting to get hold of me. Yeah, the right kind of people. There are plenty of the others too. Our skills as designers aren't limited to bricks and mortar. If we do, they are a very basic. I've always said there's no such thing as smart buildings. Buildings are dumb, actually. Go and look in science research departments, higher education institutes. There's smartness out there. It's a lot smarter than how you put pieces together, even with BIM. Sorry, I'm going to just make myself unpopular. And this is a bit of a sort of strange slide. Social architecture, it's not sort of Edward Cullen, Field and Clegg, that kind of nice humanism that we love and is kind of sort of, yeah, British. It's social architecture and how our communities kind of pull themselves together, how they organize themselves, architecture that a software engineer would use. How do we build platforms and infrastructures that really deliver value in our built environment? And I'm keen to keep stressing, built environment is what I'm interested in, not some sort of political kind of extremism. Why? We've moved from the dichotomy of state, the social state, to and the private economy, argued over wastefully forever, to what we see as the social economy. And you can see the characteristics there. The state as a provision centralized, the free market unrestrained actually self-interest, and I say I'm not expressing left or right political views here, we're working very closely with the coalition government, even if you think I'm a Marxist. Social economy, this is us, this is you and me, agency decentralized amongst citizens. Again, if the phone wasn't making a noise, I could quote you again, number 10 policy unit are looking for an invigorated citizenry. They see that actually the command and control inefficiencies we've had, and particularly at this moment of emergent practice, cannot deliver effectively. I went to the Lyric Theatre this morning. It's a beautiful building. It's kind of the concretization of an institution. We've understood something we want to value. We've invested very heavily in materials to make form. But we're in a state where we don't know what the future is. It's not a linear extrapolation. We're not in stable conditions. Somebody tell me whether Greece are going to default next week or not, I can't say. The macroeconomic picture undermines the linear extrapolation of the future. So what is the behavior? I don't know the answer. No one does, and if they tell you does, they're either kind of, they have mystical powers or they're lying. So what do we do? How can we invest millions of pounds if we don't know what we're investing them in? We've got to change the behavior. We've actually got to look at probably doing radical incremental steps. The idea we test, we invest small amounts, we see what happens. It's an open-ended process. It's much more engaging. I'll come on to it. I don't believe consultancy is a sustainable model. So I'm with some people here. That we can't simply foresee the future and then linearly execute a process to make it happen. We're going to actually have to be involved. We're going to have to curate. We do a lot of this, actually. You've got to be there. You've got to nurse it. You've got to go down some dead alleys and know when to turn back. We are to do that, you need judgment, as was said, but you need millions of small or hundreds of small judgments over and over again. here we go, the stable, unstable conditions. Stable conditions tend to generate definitive solutions, repeat products, innovation, increasing efficiencies within set frameworks. Yeah, okay, as long as you know where you're heading, you get there faster. Unstable conditions suited to organizations that create responsive solutions. That's us, we're creatives, okay? So this is our future, this is where our opportunity lies. Iterative creativity, feed off changing context to build new practice. Effectiveness of organizations is their agility to respond to shifting conditions. So actually, we've got to get light on our feet. We've got to use all those skills we have and not somehow bed down. Key behaviors. Okay, often tripped out that design is a tenth of the capital investment. Well, that's if you're looking at the form. The operational investment is 1.5 times the capital, i.e. energy, cleaning, maintenance. If you actually look at the cost of delivering a service over the lifetime of the building, it makes everything else insignificant. So we should be designing services. We should be designing not by the starting point that as far as we go is the building. We've got to look at the whole ecology and say that's where value lies. If we can actually tap into the 80 figure, a 1% improvement in that is 8 times our fee. So it's a no-brainer, but we've just got to shift our mindset to the bigger context. I think it was Eliel Saarinen said that. Every problem needs to be assessed in its next biggest context. I'm getting there, don't worry. So, architects, what is value? Quick anecdote. We were asked by the RABA to come to a design shrek with a listed school. They had a problem of too many pupils and not enough corridors. Just so that, no, it's not a success story. We got completely overlooked here. But the strategy was either you knock out walls, reorganize the building and spend £3 million of capital, or having consulted traffic engineers, they said this is a peak flow problem. The bell rang and 400 people discharged into corridors. Their way of thinking was how do you take the peak out of the system? And working with them, we came up with the idea of a soft bell where the bell rang for a period of 5 minutes. It empowered the teacher to decide when the lesson ended. And by spreading the ends of the lessons across just a shorter period than the instantaneous moment a bell rang, modelling in terms of traffic said you didn't need to actually change the physical form of a corridor. So we had a solution that saved them 2.97 million quid. The problem being, architects base their fee on how much a solution costs. We get a percentage cut. So 6% of 3 million, 180,000. 6% of 3,000 is 180 quid. We did ourselves out of 179,820 pounds. We've got to revalue the work we do. New metrics, another example. If we're looking at energy efficiency, the energy used by a building per square meter is a nonsense as a measure, but it's what's driving policy, it's driving decision-making. Because if no one's in that building, all of that energy, however small, is wasted. So we worked on a project where we devised the metric of energy per person accommodated per hour, which changes your whole focus onto utilization. To get energy efficiency, use what you've got better. You don't actually need to do any fabric works to halve the related CO2. If you then do the fabric works as well, you can get down to bottom corner some absolutely minuscule amounts of energy. If you reverse that to look at the efficiency of a secondary school, which is left empty for 86% of the time, it makes a joke of that being a BREEAM excellent building. This is at least 10 times more energy efficient. So again, we're designing, but we're designing in a much bigger set of sort of media. New models, so it's probably a little bit of a complex one to go into. It's a health center. They wanted to attempt to stop, it's kind of amusing, so I'll tell it. Earl's Court, lots of New Zealand and Australian sort of young adults coming to London. McKinsey as a consultant say at that age you fall into a bracket called the immortals. You don't think you're going to get ill. They don't register a doctor. They then pick up a sexually transmitted disease, London lifestyle, and they go to A&E. To treat them in A&E costs £5,000. To treat them with a triage nurse in a GP surgery costs them something like £100. So they had a massive burden on the primary care system. They wanted to shift it. And so they asked us to design an environment that wasn't stigmatized as a health facility, that actually combined lifestyle choices, so people actually could discreetly, without sort of embarrassment, go and sort themselves out. This is an economic driver. This isn't a sort of architecture or its design and let's redo things for the sake of it. These are the real decisions. Somebody asked me earlier about clients. When we're talking to clients about these, which are the real issues, whether it's green clad, whether it's glass clad, whether it's steel or concrete, do you know what? I agree. Our clients often don't care. We care more. When you're talking to them about the effectiveness of their service or the cost of their delivery, they listen really well. So yeah, integrated service platforms. We are designing physical environments, and I think they are sort of primary importance. So this isn't saying go off and become a sort of behavioral economist or a sort of sociologist. We have those in our team. We actually bring this around. This is about making place, but in an integrated way. This is where the value lies. And I say, all the time we marginalise ourselves, we're going to be marginalised further. Another quick example, this is a secondary school. The average secondary school seems to be costing 20 to 30 million quid, building large factories on a post-industrial model, sticking all features, all facilities in one big box, probably in an inopportune location because the only sites big enough are on the out of town where transport isn't good, it's no longer at the heart of the community. We were given the brief to try and find a site for a school in central London. There's no such site, and if there was, a commercial developer would be buying it for hundreds of millions. Makes a nonsense of the 20 to 30 million pound construction cost. So we came up with a disaggregated model, looking at latent capacity in bingo halls, cinemas, church halls, in music shops, in local universities. How much could you disaggregate? And using technology, I know it's a dangerous assumption, say everyone has a smartphone, but a lot of kids do, whether it's BlackBerry or Apple, and you can dynamically allocate resources. So we've got a model where we've got 10% of the new build construction, a saving of 90% of the capital, and in the process, stimulating neighbourhoods, reintegrating 1,500 youths into streets. The passive supervision's there. It actually enriches a neighbourhood. Any fans of Jane Jacobs? Enough said. So we're looking at designing space, place, and models. Resourceful, say latent assets, buildings to infrastructural ecologies. I know it's nice to sit there and have the total control of a private art gallery. We've done them. And they're great, they're kind of technical studies. They allow us to hone our spatial skills. But we've got to hone those skills purposefully about tactics. What are the moves that support ecology? We're doing a lot of work building institutions, jump through those. So I mentioned the Wiki House for you. Open source making just as a massive movement, actually democratizing, getting engaged, this empowered citizenry. And it's also fun. I'm quite nostalgic about kind of Amish barn raisings in the North America when this is the back of a shopping centre in Colchester, but it created community. What is architecture? What is actually kind of creating space as a social act? This is a tool we can deploy if we design it to be accessible. The more we design buildings that require specialist subcontractors from Germany to come over and glaze, the more we disempower. It might be ugly. I don't mind yet. It'll get better with time. John Cocteau famously said something along the lines of, fashion starts out looking beautiful and is inevitably proved to be ugly. Art often starts out ugly and ultimately is proved to be beautiful. If we're going to do something radically different, of course people don't get it to start with. It doesn't fit conventional sensibility. But if we stick with doing what is already appreciated as sort of within the realms of acceptability, we'll never make progress. It's easier to ship recipes than cakes and biscuits. John Maynard Keynes. Why aren't we making new recipes rather than just trying to perfect the cake? There's value in that. Get a recipe right and a lot of people can use it. We often looked at product design. Yeah, nail a product and sell a million of them, you'll be rich. open source making, and you don't need to have them made in a factory on the other part of the world. This is a CNC table. It's a great example because there's a CNC cutting template to make that table. So as long as you've got a friend with a machine, you can make one and make yourself one, your friend one, and it can keep going. There's some people down in the University of Bath making a rep-rap machine that does that with metals and plastics. Soon you'll be able to pick what you want from the internet and print it locally, cut out all the shipping, and actually now we've got sustainability. It's not about making the ship from China to Britain more energy efficient. Open source, say, give stuff away. Come on, if we're going to have some commons, the idea that we're working as professionals for public good, we've got to share knowledge. It's suicidal as a business plan. I had the kind of privilege of working with Richard Fielden, the late Richard Fielden of Fielden Clegg Bradley, who pathologically shared. They wrote a book and published it, giving away almost every trick they knew about environmental design. You think that's crazy from a commercial perspective, but if you're really interested in making the world a better place, why the hell are you keeping knowledge that could do that? And secondly, it's not so dumb. That publication put them at the forefront of the discussion. It demonstrated that they were head and shoulders above everybody else in their understanding. 2 minutes, we're going to get there. Time banking. People actually investing time. Social capital, I thought I'd cut these out. 15,000 square feet, as I say, not by wish, by necessity. Local authority needed a partner. We as architects had to step in. We designed, we operate, we own, co-own a space for 1,000 startup companies. We've now put in place a £3 million investment fund to support those companies that we have an equity stake in, and we're building that to £37 million as we currently speak. So we can actually lead this debate. We can be in control, and we don't have to think it's only people with money. If you have the right ideas, you go out and actually bring them board. Here's a picture. It's actually quite a nice space, and it's quite fun. We designed all the furniture. It was done on a shoestring. I'd say we're in low capital times. I think actually coming up solutions that look at levering the effectiveness of existing assets is the way to go. More high profile, built an institution for Somerset House, Make Britain, global institution of arts and crafts in the UK. And we extended this to Scotland 2030, where we delivered three scenarios to the Scottish Parliament about what would such a future look for Scotland, depending on how wholeheartedly they embraced this kind of thinking about empowering the citizenry, being us as actually active agents in that. Book, I've got a copy somewhere, commissioned to write case studies showing this isn't just kind of a niche little kind of, oh, isn't that interesting. Drawn from across the world, 100 examples, not one of them required public funding. We've kind of silently put that in agenda. Actually, people are doing this. They're taking control. They need agency we can bring. Micro, massive, similar things. Changing practice. This is going to be really quick. Sorry, it's in the back of the book. There's actually 8. I'd already slimmed it down to 6. We don't have time. Recognizing the protagonists. The people doing this stuff are not the usual characters. Participation beyond consultation. It's not about being a consultant at arm's length. You're vested in the process you are working closely with. Hybrid funding, it's not looking for who's got the big bag of money. Kickstarter, crowdsource funding, match funding, buzzwords, look at them all. They're massive movements happening. They're really going to change the future. We know for all those sort of public procurement contracts outlined, they've got no money. Who cares? No one's going to be building anything of that scale. So let's actually work on the efficiencies of what we've got. Reuse of existing assets, touched on. Design tactics, as I say, this comes down to behaviour change. We're not instrumentalising space, but we've got to design things that lend themselves to different behaviour and even nudge. If anyone's seen Malcolm Gladwell, look at nudge theory. Small preferential choices make big behaviour change. And we as designers, by where we put a tap, the corner on a bench, it actually goes back to sort of Alvar Aalto and those kind of haptic senses sort of in his buildings. Understand where the interaction with your design levers change. Open-ended process, that's what I go back to. There isn't a finite outcome. It's a dynamic process. It's living, breathing ecology. It needs curation and not fixed design. Changing us, there we are, or a few of us, the skills we have. Hugely varied set of skills in the office. Say, this grounding in architecture, which for you guys, good message. You've got transferable skills. You are creative. You've got lateral skills. You can apply yourself to a huge number of things. You don't need to be the next Norman Foster, and I'd advise not trying. Quick strap line to finish off. We as an office do drawings much more like this than elevations. Yeah, no one won an award or got sued for an elevation. That's because there's no value in elevations. Someone could get sued very heavily for what we're drawing here. That's because it's very highly valuable. Yeah, a little bit of pictures. There is some kind of eye candy. Go to our website. There's all the sexy stuff, but to be honest, I'd be overshadowed by it. So, yeah, you don't need me talking over. That's me, and yeah, it's not as you're being told.